Face the Nation, coming up next.
America was built by people with a few dollars and a dream. And while many don't know it, there's one path to success that still only requires a dream and about $10. That's right. If your dream is to start or grow your business, something as simple as the right business card could make all the difference. And today, at Vistaprint.com, you can get 500 full-color business cards for only $9.99. That's right, only $9.99. Just go to Vistaprint.com and enter promo code 8989 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 8989.
I'm Bob Schieffer, and today on Face the Nation, the president tries to muster a coalition to fight ISIS, and the NFL commissioner says he's sorry again.
I got it wrong in the handling of the Ray Rice matter, and I'm sorry for that.
We'll talk about the domestic violence crisis in the NFL, then we'll examine the president's plan for war on ISIS and the divide between the military and the president on the need for ground troops. Plus, in another embarrassment for the Secret Service, a man jumps the fence and actually gets into the White House through the front door. We'll talk to Intelligence Committee Chair Senator Dianne Feinstein and Congressman Mike Rogers, then turn to an all-star panel of experts for analysis. And on the eve of the annual United Nations meeting in New York, we'll check in with UN Ambassador Samantha Power and get an update on the efforts to fight the Ebola epidemic. 60 years of news, because this is Face the Nation. And good morning again. We are going to start with a story that just will not go away, the crisis in the NFL. Roger Goodell promises reforms in the league on domestic violence. So far, he's short on specifics. The Baltimore Ravens say they'll hold a news conference Monday to formally respond to an ESPN report that they knew the details of what Ray Rice did but successfully lobbied the NFL for leniency. And a shocking report that has gone all but unnoticed, the league says that nearly one in three NFL players will develop debilitating brain conditions. The anchor of the NFL Today and CBS News special correspondent James Brown has been on this story all week. And JB, we start, as I understand it, with the Baltimore Ravens now saying that this report on ESPN contains numerous errors, inaccuracies, false assumptions, and perhaps misunderstandings. I know you have been talking to people in the Ravens organization. You've been talking to them all week. What can you tell us about this?
And, Bob, including the owner, Steve Bisciotti, with whom I talked two Thursdays ago before our Thursday night broadcast, that which has been reported on in the Outside the Lines report by ESPN is nothing different than what I covered in my conversations, a wide-ranging one, with Steve Bisciotti. And with respect to the text messages specifically that the report talked about, I asked Steve Bisciotti about that. He acknowledged and was very forthright that he has sent two text messages to Ray and shared the contents of, in terms of whether people want to see that as him trying to buy Ray Rice's silence. I didn't necessarily see it that way. I thought that Mr. Bisciotti was very forthcoming in what he had been offering to Ray, one in terms of support of the organization and potentially a job afterwards, which is not different than what he's done with the previous player, Dante Stallworth, an ex-NFL player who unfortunately was inebriated and involved in a car accident that killed an innocent person as well.
Well, are we going to get anything more specific? I mean, you know, Ray McDonald of the 49ers charged with felony assault on his pregnant wife, he's going to be in the starting lineup today.
Which is exactly why I guess a policy needs to come from the top down and not leave the individual 32 teams with determining what that should be. Bob, I think there is consensus that if a player is accused of domestic violence, then until the facts are in, that player ought to be sat down with pay, that is. If, in fact, a player is convicted of the charge, then they ought to face some type of stiff penalty, whatever that is. Six games a year without pay. It's as simple as that. But those are things that will be collectively bargained. I know a lot of people wanted to see and hear a lot more specifics from the commissioner. But again, there's an investigation, as you well know, that's going to be conducted by Bob Mueller, the former FBI director. And the commissioner said everything is on the table in terms of what will be done once all the facts are in. And quite frankly, a number of players want to see that the commissioner be subjected to some type of fine and or suspension, because that's exactly the kind of standard that he's held the players to.
All right. Well, JB, keep us posted. We'll let you get on to your business with the NFL today, and we'll see you later during the broadcast day. Thanks a lot.
Good talking to you, Bob.
World leaders are gathering in New York this week for the annual United Nations Conference, and U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power joins us from New York. Ambassador, welcome. Let me just start right in here. U.S. officials, according to the Wall Street Journal, say it is important for other nations to join the United States in launching airstrikes into Syria. So I guess my question is, do you have any indication yet that other nations will be willing to do that?
We do, Bob, but we're going to leave it to other nations to announce for themselves what their specific commitments to the coalition are going to be. Secretary Kerry chaired a meeting of the Security Council here on Friday in New York, and more than 40 countries spoke in support of our efforts, including France, which announced that it had just conducted airstrikes in Iraq against ISIL for the first time, Saudi Arabia, which described the training facility that it's providing for Syria's moderate opposition, and a whole host of other commitments, including Germany, which has broken with tradition in order to provide weapons and military equipment to the Iraqis and the Kurds. So it's a multifaceted approach, as you know, with a whole host of aspects to it. But the combat role is very important, of course.
I just want to make sure I heard you right, because I think you made a little news here. You do have word that other nations are going to join us on conducting airstrikes into Syria.
Well, as you know, Bob, the president has said we're not going to allow ISIL to have a safe haven in Syria, but no decisions have been made in terms of how we're going to proceed in that. In terms of the broader anti-ISIL coalition, we do indeed have the support along the lines that I've described.
And ground troops, what commitments are there for ground troops to join in this?
I think the most important commitments are the commitments of the Iraqis, the Kurds, and the Syrian moderate opposition, which has been fighting ISIL for nearly a year and has been appealing for outside help. And now that Congress has approved overwhelmingly and in a very bipartisan way the train and equip package, that help is on the way for the moderate opposition. So local forces are always going to be your best bet fighting ISIL in a country that, of course, belongs to the Iraqis, the Kurds, and in the case of Syria, the Syrians.
Secretary Kerry said last week in New York that every country has a part in this, including Iran. What exactly is Iran's part?
Well, let me stress that we are not coordinating military operations or sharing intelligence with Iran. I think what the secretary meant was that Iran has made clear that it, too, views ISIL as an enemy and as a threat. And so in that respect, all of our operations are oriented around the objective of degrading and destroying ISIL, and we're waiting to hear whether Iran thinks it has a constructive role to play. But I would note that Iran's behavior and its actions in Syria have been very destructive from our perspective, supporting Hezbollah, supporting the Assad regime, which itself has both been complicit with ISIL, not exhibiting any energy or intensity in going after ISIL, spending much more time going after civilian neighborhoods and the moderate opposition than going after such a profound, monstrous terrorist threat. And that they have received the full support of Iran, as you know, throughout this conflict. So that those actions would have to change, really, if we're going to deal with ISIL in a comprehensive way. Assad is not somebody who can be relied upon as a partner in the effort against ISIL.
Ambassador, let me ask you this question, because a lot of people in Washington, it's bothering them. Why does the president continue to stress what we're not going to do? No ground troops, no shock and awe, instead of stressing what we are going to do. Is he boxing himself here in an effort to assure people we're not going to launch another war like we already had in Iraq?
Well, I think what he's doing is describing the contours of the campaign that he has worked out with his cabinet, and most importantly with Chairman Dempsey, Secretary Hagel, and his military advisors. So I guess I disagree with the premise. I think he's been very clear that we are going to use our unique capabilities through air operations to support the ground efforts by the Iraqis and the Kurds. We are going to mobilize counter-financing. We are going to promote countering violent extremism programs in communities, working with countries all around the world. There are a lot of different aspects to this strategy that he has spoken to. And when he comes to New York on Wednesday, he'll be convening a head of state summit with the Security Council, a very rare thing in the history of the UN Security Council, where new obligations are created on states to stop the stem of foreign terrorist fighters to conflict areas like that in Iraq and Syria.
But I guess the question that a lot of the critics have is, isn't he kind of watering down his message to the terrorists when he says, we're not going to do this and we're not going to do that? Do you think that causes them not to take seriously what the United States is planning to do here?
Well, given the string of military defeats that ISIL has suffered since the United States got involved in Iraq, I would assume that ISIL is taking the United States very, very seriously, as they are now on their heels in a way that they were not before the U.S. got involved. But the other thing I'd say, Bob, is that the strategy that the president has laid out has the overwhelming support of the American people, even after 10 years of war. So I think we are presenting the strategy in a manner that the American people understand is in our interest. They understand the national security imperative of taking on ISIL. They understand that other countries have to be a part of that, and we have to build a coalition. So I think the message is coming across loud and clear.
Madam Secretary, Madam Ambassador, I should say, we thank you so much for being with us this morning.
I really appreciate you having me.
Hope you'll
come
back.
Thank you. Absolutely.
And to talk about all of that, the two chairs of the Intelligence Committees are here with us this morning. It's rare for a Republican and a Democrat to appear together anymore in Washington, which is just another sign of the partisan divide, but two who are willing to do that. California Senator Dianne Feinstein, she's in San Francisco. Michigan Congressman Mike Rogers here in the studio. They chair the two intelligence committees. And Senator Feinstein, I want to ask you about what Samantha Power has just been talking about. But first, I have to ask you about this situation we have now, this thing that's blown up in the NFL. One of the players for the 49ers, your hometown team, Ray McDonald, charged with felony assault on his wife, yet he will be in the starting lineup out there today. How do you feel about all this and what's happening in the NFL?
Well, I think I can speak for all of the women in the Senate by saying we're surprised, amazed, and very resolute to do something about it. Having said that, I'm an old 49er fan. I remember the glory days of the Niners when I was mayor, 5 Super Bowls, terrific team. What's happened, excuse me, is a dramatic growth in violence. And I think if you combine violence with alcohol in a social setting, you get a very unpredictable result. I think there is no place for this, period. I believe very strongly that if a player is arrested, they should be suspended. And if they are convicted, that ends it. Now, I know they're contracts, but this has gone on too long. It is getting too bad. And these teams have to set an example for the rest of society. Football is a major sport. The NFL is a great league. I've known Pete Rozelle. I know Roger Goodell a little bit. But there has to be a strength in the league, and they have to project the values of what's right and what's wrong. And to let players continue to play after they've been convicted of what would be a felony, I think is a huge mistake.
All right. Well, Mike Rogers, I want to ask you about something that happened here in Washington last night. And this, we keep talking about national security. A guy jumps the White House gate and actually gets into the White House before he's arrested. The president and his family were not there and all of that. But what needs to be done here?
Well, again, one of the biggest problems in a static security force is atrophy of concern. And I think what you have seen is that they're not doing their audits, their checks, their test runs to make sure that people are up to the right standard. We see this a lot. It happens frequently in other places where there are static security forces. And it's just a matter of the Secret Service upping their game to make sure that they can maintain that every detail matters. A door locked, a quick reaction when somebody hits the fence and over the gate. And I think they're going to have to reinstate some of these ongoing checks about what activities they participate in. And when I'm talking about their self-audits on their security.
The New York Times reports today that a Syrian terror group called Khorasan is more of a direct threat to the United States and Europe than ISIS. You have talked about this, Congressman Rogers, but it's not gotten much attention, I must say. I'd like to ask both of you, all of a sudden now, ISIS is here, and all of a sudden we're hearing there's something worse down the line.
Yeah. Well, first of all, al-Qaeda always has been on that immediate path of conducting Western attacks. We shouldn't forget it. What happened with ISIS, and I disagree with the assumption that it's less, it's different. That's more immediate, this group that you call Khorasan Group. We described it before as forward-deployed al-Qaeda operatives who were engaging with al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula to develop a terror plot to bring down airplanes. They haven't lost that interest in doing it. That means it's serious. They have both capability, financing, and people. All of that's dangerous. But if you step back, so does ISIS, except they have something different. They have access to people with Western passports. Well, al-Nusra, this group of al-Qaeda individuals, and al-Nusra is an al-Qaeda group in Syria, we believe has access to some of those same individuals. That's why we're so concerned about the possibility of them pulling off a successful attack and why we've retripled our efforts, if you will.
Senator Feinstein, do you share Chairman Rogers' concern about this group?
I do. And I think there are essentially three major groups that would affect our national security, affect our homeland. Of course, one of them is ISIL. Another is AQAP coming out of Yemen that has a bomb that goes through magnetometers, has tried to get four of those on different occasions into our country. And there is ISIL. Each one of these is capable one day, some sooner than later, of a strike against our country. So this is not a good situation. With ISIL, in my view, at least, it's a little more complicated. This aims to be a country, a caliphate. It has a third of Syria already. It's occupied some 14, 15 cities in Iraq. it beheads, excuse me, it beheads children. I have a picture of what I estimate to be a six-year-old girl in a gingham party dress, white tights, a little red band around her wrist, Mary Jane's, and she's lying on the ground and her head is gone. This could be an American child, it could be a European child, it could be a child anywhere. And this is the mentality of the group that we are so concerned with. They have killed thousands. They are marching on. They have an army. They're well organized. Many of us believe they're aimed at Baghdad, perhaps our embassy there, and who knows what else. So the question, I think, comes what kind of authorization of use of force we give the president. And when we go back after the election, that has to be a major point of debate.
Well, let me ask you this, then. The president keeps stressing there will be no ground troops involved in this. You heard me talking to Samantha Power about this very thing. Is the president boxing himself in here by stressing what we're not going to do? Should he be talking more about what we may have to do and that we have to do what's necessary here?
Well, the president, excuse me, has a strategy. That strategy, I think, had something that was very special. That is a majority of Republicans and a majority of the Senate supporting him. And that's the first time I think this has happened in a long time. So it is something very special. I think it states a strategy. Now, strategies develop. I understand what General Mattis and General Dempsey have said, but I think we need to deal with use of force in a general nature and in an amendment, perhaps to the authorization to use military force, perhaps in something separate, that deals with non-state actors who are real threats to our country and who are creating massive violence throughout the world. ISIS is a problem because it has access to Europe, so many fighters for Europe and visa waiver countries where they can go back and be waived into our country. That's part of the concern about ISIS. But I think we need to deal with this on a more comprehensive basis.
Well, Congressman Rogers, does that mean that Congress should tell the president, look, if you need to use ground troops, we're ready to back you on that. We need to do whatever needs to be done here.
Well, we need to start talking about a plan to defeat ISIS. We probably should lay out our battle plans, but we shouldn't take anything off of our battle plans. And what you're seeing now, I think, is a frustration. Frustration on the military perspective saying, please don't limit us on what we need to do to defeat this terrorist group. So think about where we are. Egypt, Sisi just said that he would be interested in helping on ISIS. This is huge. This is an important development. But a few years ago, he said, give me the equipment, Mr. President, so that I can push back on terrorists in the Sinai. He said no. The terrorists said yes. He's got a fight on his hand. The Arab League partners came to us a couple of years ago and said, Mr. President, we need some help on fighting extremists in eastern Syria. The president said no. The terrorists said yes. Now they hold land about the size of Indiana in eastern Syria, in Iraq. Poroshenko came to the United States of America, gave an inspirational speech about standing up for liberty, used our revolutionary motto, live free or die. The president said no. The Russians said yes. And so we've got to change this. We've got to get everybody at the table. I agree with Dianne Feinstein. We need to deal with this comprehensive. Stop saying no. Start saying yes. Let's get this taken care of.
Mike Rogers, Dianne Feinstein, thank you both very much. And we'll be back.
America was built by people with a few dollars and a dream. And while many don't know it, there's one path to success that still only requires a dream and about $10. That's right. If your dream is to start or grow your business, something as simple as the right business card could make all the difference. And today at Vistaprint.com, you can get 500 full-color business cards for only $9.99. That's right, only $9.99. Just go to Vistaprint.com and enter promo code 8989 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 8989.
As I watched the documentary on PBS this week about Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt and their cousin Teddy, I couldn't help but think about what set them apart from today's politicians. Yes, they were very smart, but there are still a lot of smart people in Washington. Yes, they saw wrongs that needed to be corrected, but we still have those with good hearts. And yes, they were good politicians, but we still have a few good politicians around here. What set them apart, to my mind, was their courage. When they saw wrong, they not only tried to make it right, but they did so with no guarantee of success. What a glaring contrast to the Washington of today, which spends most of its time doing nothing and the rest of its time devising schemes to avoid responsibility for anything. The latest example. When Congress approved arming the Syrian rebels, they stuck the legislation in a bill that also provided money to keep the government from shutting down. That way, if arming the rebels turns out to be a debacle, members can say, I was never for arming the rebels, I just voted to prevent a government shutdown. The Roosevelt documentary was 14 hours long, spread over 7 nights. A story about the courage of today's Washington would take about 30 minutes at most.
America was built by people with a few dollars and a dream. And while many don't know it, there's one path to success that still only requires a dream and about $10. That's right. If your dream is to start or grow your business, something as simple as the right business card could make all the difference. And today at Vistaprint.com, you can get 500 full-color business cards for only $9.99. That's right, only $9.99. Just go to Vistaprint.com and enter promo code 8989 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 8989.
And welcome back now to Face the Nation. We are joined by our panel, former Congresswoman Jane Harman. She is now at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Former Senator Joe Lieberman, who is heading up a new anti-terrorism group called the Counter-Extremism Project. CBS contributor Mike Morrell, formerly number two at the CIA, along with Robert Kagan of the Brookings Institution. Welcome to you all. Well, Samantha Power says that other nations have agreed to participate in airstrikes into Syria. Any guesses as to who that would be? And I would take that as good news in a week when there hasn't been much, Jane.
Well, France is one. The UAE, I think, is two. And I think some other groups from the neighborhood would be very welcome there. But the challenge is, who will be on the ground? That's the murky piece of this. As you covered in the last segment with Dianne Feinstein and Mike Rogers, there are several groups on the ground that could harm us. And if the al-Nusra group, now called or now part of a Khorasan group affiliated with the Taliban, affiliates with the bomb makers in Yemen and then gets some foreign fighters, I know this is really complicated, that group could harm the U.S. even sooner than ISIL. So we have to be very careful on the ground, and we need Muslim boots on the ground, and I haven't seen anybody sign up yet.
I think the French said they would go only into Iraq with their airstrikes.
I think that's true.
But otherwise,
well,
thank you.
Syria is the harder problem.
Yeah.
And if we're going to push back ISIL by air, somebody has to hold the ground, and we're training up some moderate Syrians, but that's a long, slow process.
Yeah, and that you're absolutely right. Who are going to be the troops that go in on the ground?
Let me just get back to the air for a minute, because, you know, it's about 11 days since the president went before the nation, essentially declared war against ISIS. I thought it was an excellent speech. Said he would go into Syria to follow them to their havens. I think it's very important that we strike ISIS from the air in Syria quickly, because in the midst of all the conversation about will there be ground troops or not, I think people in the region and maybe elsewhere are beginning to question whether there'll be American follow-through on the speech that the president made. So it would be great to have allies with us when we strike the terrorists in Syria, but it's not worth waiting much longer. I hope those airstrikes come against ISIS in Syria very soon.
And, Bob, it's very important that the countries who join us, that some of those be Arab countries. And I think Jane is right. We're going to see that. The reason it's important is so that we don't play to the ISIS and al-Nusra narrative that it's Christians killing Muslims. It's very important to have those Arab countries with us.
Bob, the president keeps talking about the things, I mean, and I'm quoting his critics here now, the things we're not going to do. And you heard me ask Samantha Power about that. What concerns me, and I think what concerns some critics, is that he's diluting his message when he says what we're not going to do.
Well, partly the problem is he's diluting the message, but I think the bigger problem is that they're building their strategy backwards from what they don't want to do. If we've decided that that ISIS or these other groups are vital threats to the United States, you don't usually deal with vital threats to the United States by first listing all the things you're not going to do to go after them. We've had senior military advisors, generals, chosen by President Obama, who've made it clear they believe there has to be some U.S. military presence on the ground to make these operations work. But we see a president who's saying that's not going to happen. And I think that, you know, the biggest problem is a strategy that can actually have some success of working.
But the strategy needs a soft power piece. And that's why what Joe is about to do, launch on Monday, is so critical. Our narrative, our counter-narrative, not just ours, but the 40 nations in this coalition, against ISIL is what's going to win the day. The pragmatic Sunnis, who for the moment are supporting ISIL, are doing that because there is no real alternative. Maybe the new government in Iraq will be that alternative. Maybe something in Syria will be that alternative. But we've got to woo those folks back. If we don't win the argument, we, the coalition of 40, are never going to prevail against.
What exactly are you going to do?
Thanks, Bob. The Counter-Extremism Project will be a private, nonprofit, international action and policy group, which essentially is saying the greatest threat to our security, world security, today comes from extremism, and most of it today is from Islamic extremism, terrorism, violence. Governments obviously have to lead, but we think there's a role for people in private life. And we're going to do three things mainly. One, create a database of these terrorist groups and who's supporting them, their financial support. Secondly, we're going to work to break that financial support. For instance, if you're a company illegally buying oil from ISIL or ISIS, we're going to call you out and put pressure on you to stop. And the third, really important, and we're building support from leaders in the Muslim world for this, there needs to be a well-financed counter-narrative to the extremist ideology that is drawing more and more young, disaffected Muslims into this terrible, violent lifestyle. It's very clear, everywhere the extremists go, including ISIS, the people, the Muslims on the ground are terrified, and a lot of them are leaving. They don't want this. This is unpopular. But if the rest of the world sits back and doesn't provide a counter-narrative to this violence, they'll leave, and the extremists, with all their brutality, will dominate more and more of the world. We can't let that happen.
Bob, you were just about to say.
Well, I was going to say, first of all, that's critically important, and I'm really glad Senator Lieberman's taking this task on. It's important, and of course soft power is important, but we are kidding ourselves if we don't understand at the end of the day the people we're fighting about don't care about soft power, they don't care about the international economy, they are using force to accomplish their objectives. I think in America these days we have somehow told ourselves that there are a lot of ways of dealing with these problems other than hard power. Vladimir Putin cares about hard power, ISIS cares about hard power, and in order even to accomplish these soft power objectives, sure, you have to prove that you are also willing to fight them on the ground and defeat them. That's how you will get allies.
So two more things on the hard power side. One is I agree 100% with Jane that we have to find a way to get troops on the ground guiding and assisting the moderate opposition in Syria. That is the only way they're going to be effective. That either has to be the U.S., or it has to be other countries, hopefully Arab countries, but somebody's got to do that. And then over the longer term, there has to be a capacity building program in all of these countries that face Islamic extremists. And that capacity building program has to focus on intelligence, it has to focus on law enforcement, it has to focus on military, and it has to focus on rule of law.
But what do we do about Assad?
You know, the president said, and he's right, he's our enemy. He's the reason that Syria is in the terrible shape it's in. Syria is in large areas ungoverned today, which is why a group like Khorasan, which mostly al-Qaeda forward deployment, has gone there. So I don't think there can be. We can both fight ISIS and fight Assad at the same time, and that's what I think.
And that's what we should do?
I think that's exactly what we should do.
We should attack Assad.
Yeah, we should attack Assad and we should attack ISIS and we should support the Syrian
army. There's one thing in particular we
can
do in Syria, which is as we take strikes against ISIS in Syria, we can also do what we should have been doing over the past few years, which is taking down Assad's air force, which he's using to commit terrible humanitarian disasters. We can crater his runways. We can keep his air from flying. And that's something the Saudis are also asking us to do.
Let's understand that he already, with his air force, is attacking the non-ISIL groups on the ground. I mean, ISIL is helping him for the moment. We have to be careful as we get into Syria that we're not empowering the wrong groups and end up empowering him. Let's understand he used chemical weapons on his own people, something that unprecedented since the early 80s when Iraq did this on Iran, and Iran hasn't forgotten that. And I think we should continue to view him as a moral outlaw. And in these ungoverned parts of Syria, we do have a challenge because there is no effective governance on the ground. It's an ungoverned territory. Just one more point on soft power, though. Let's understand these messages that ISIL is putting out, which unfortunately are enhanced by running them on media. I wish the Western media would not amplify them. But at any rate, they're putting out effective soft power messages and recruiting all these psychopaths to their cause. That's who the foreign fighters are. There are some true believers maybe inside, and then there are these Sunni pragmatists. But the bottom line is the soft power that ISIL uses is how ISIL is growing its ranks.
Senator Lieberman is absolutely right. Assad is the key problem here, supported by Iran and supported by Russia. I would fully support going after him and his leadership team aggressively, but I don't want to do it in a way that degrades the Syrian military, the Syrian security service, and the Syrian intelligence service, because they need to be able to bring stability to that country when Assad does go. So we need to get rid of Assad, but we need to do it in a way that keeps that keeps the ability to hold that country together in place, so we don't end up with Iraq or we don't end up with Libya.
I don't think the pilots who are dropping barrel bombs on civilian buildings are going to be the ones to pull Syria together after this after Assad leaves.
How do you do that, though, Mike? What you're saying, get Assad but leave his army in place?
I think we have to come to the conclusion that I think the senators come to, and I think everybody at this table agrees that he is the primary problem. So let's figure out a way of removing him from the battlefield.
Yeah, he will try to act as if he's our ally now because we have the same enemy in ISIS. But as others have said, sometimes the enemy of your enemy is still your enemy, and Assad is the enemy here. I think we remember last year after the Red Line and the chemical weapons, President was going to strike Assad's military structures from the air, pulled back on it, as we know. We're going to go into Syria now with air power against ISIS. There's no reason why we can't selectively use that air power against Assad, and that will empower the people of Syria, particularly the moderate opposition that we're now going to give arms and training.
Jane doesn't seem quite as
I'm not as robustly certain that we have this mission in focus. I don't think Obama's strategy yet includes going after Assad. It certainly includes not working with him. I think these terror groups, again, it's complicated. It's not just ISIL. It's al-Nusra, it's Khorasan, it's these other opportunistic groups, which if they connect to Yemen and the bomb maker could hurt us faster using foreign fighters and clean passports than ISIL might. But we have to keep our eye on that. And let's remember the rest of the world. Iran, the deadline for the agreement is coming up. It's a very serious issue in the Middle East, which deserves massive focus. Russia and Ukraine. These are countries with nuclear capability or nuclear weapons, and an arms race in the Middle East right now in the middle of all this would be catastrophic.
Well, what would Russia do if we just declared war on Assad and went after him? After all, Syria is their client state.
I think we need to have a conversation with the Russians that probably will not go anywhere, but we need to have the conversation that says these Islamic extremists in Iraq and Syria are as great a threat to you, Vladimir Putin, as they are to us, because they're going to go up into the Caucasus and they're going to create extremism there. They're a potential nightmare for Russia.
I agree with Mike on that, but Russia obviously does not see Assad as an enemy as we do. He's their client. He's their agent, and I don't think you're going to be able to convince them join us in that. Here's the problem. When Putin went into and took Crimea, I don't think he asked, what are the Americans going to do in response? I'm afraid he may have decided they're not going to do anything, and the Europeans are not going to do anything. I think this is a case where America has to show, with our allies, particularly in the Arab world, we're ready to act. And that action will create a reality that will not only bring others to our side, but will make it harder for Russia to respond. What are they going to do?
Why do you think that the American people are so disenchanted right now with the president's handling of all this? The latest poll I saw showed 37% approve of the president's handling of foreign policy. Why is that way, and can the president turn that around?
Well, he just got a bipartisan majority in each House of Congress for the request to arm and train the moderate Syrians in Saudi Arabia. And he's just built a 40-nation coalition to support him. He's going to be at the UN this week. I think a new poll is needed, but I'd make one last point. Congress. The New Yorker says the policy at the moment is don't ask, just tell. Congress is ducking this whole thing. And I think that's totally irresponsible. The American people's voice is Congress. There needs to be a special session before or after the election and a debate and review of what our comprehensive strategy
is. Bob, your question is a really good one because, look, I think the public began to lose confidence in the president on foreign policy because they didn't feel he was leading. And for a while, they were happy with that because they wanted to stay out of problems. But then Russia, ISIS, Iraq, the whole combination has scared people. Now, I thought that the president's speech to the nation about a week and a half ago was going to turn that around. And I'm afraid it didn't, because there were too many of what you talked about before. It, not just what we're going to do to protect you, Mr. and Mrs. America, but here's what we're not going to do. And that, I don't think that was particularly reassuring to the American people, and it was reassuring to our enemies over there. So that's why I say, Mr. President, order the U.S. Air Force to begin striking ISIS, at least in Syria right now, and stop saying what we're not going to do. Let the enemy worry about that.
Okay.
Henry Stimson had a great line. He said, a president can't ask the American people to tell him in advance if they would follow him if he decided to lead.
All right. I think we're going to let it stop right there. We want to talk some now about this crisis over Ebola. And joining us from Nashville, the head of the Vanderbilt University Department of Preventive Medicine, Dr. William Schaffner, and our own CBS News chief medical correspondent, Dr. John LaPook. He is in New York, of course. Dr. LaPook, let me start with you. We got reports this week that the CDC is estimating the number of cases of Ebola by the end of January as possibly affecting as many as 500,000 people. Now, this research has not been made public yet, but can you tell us, do you know anything about this? Does this sound right to you?
Well, I did reach out to the CDC this morning, and they're backing away from that exact number, but they are going to come out in the future with some estimates. But I think there's no doubt this is a huge problem. It's daunting. But there are some encouraging signs, because obviously this is the biggest international effort that we've ever seen for an outbreak. And in addition to understanding that you have to supply people with hospitals, with training, with personnel, there's also the realization that you need to build trust. And that's been one of the big problems here, because people have been running away from healthcare. So, for example, I spoke last night to Dr. Paul Farmer, who's the head of Partners in Health, and to Raj Punjabi with Last Mile Health. They met with President Sirleaf of Liberia last week, and with the idea of, for the very first time in Liberia and in Western Africa, making modern medicine available so that people actually run towards healthcare rather than running away from it. And Paul said to me, when in history has Ebola ever collided with modern medicine? Never.
Dr. Schaffner, the president, as we all know, assigned 3,000 U.S. military personnel to deploy to Africa in this fight. How much impact do you think this is going to have? Obviously, it's going to help some, but how far do you think this will go? Will we need to do more?
Well, this is a big problem, and perhaps we'll need to do more, but this is an important beginning. The military is going to go in there and put in field hospitals, MASH units, if you will, and do an awful lot of training of locals. Don't give a man a fish, teach them to fish. And we have to leave that infrastructure in place. We're going to have to organize medical care, just as John has said. It's very important for two reasons, not just the humanitarian reason. We want to take care of these very sick people, but also we need to get those sick people out of homes. That's the public health reason, because when they're cared for by people at home, their family members, that's where transmission occurs and the next cases occur.
What do you think, Dr. LaPook? I mean, obviously, this would not be the assignment that I think most people in our military have been hoping to get. This is a very dangerous assignment. What do you see as the challenges for these people that are going to be going there?
Well, I think it must be daunting to think about going over there. They're not going to be having direct contact with patients, and I think that's very important, because there's been a lot of misinformation around here. It's not airborne. You don't get it like you get the flu. You have to have direct contact with fluids. But I think it's such an important thing, because it's not only affecting the people directly who have Ebola, but as Dan Kelly, who's a doctor who I spoke to who was in Sierra Leone, said to me, Ebola kills healthcare systems. So think about it. All the people who are staying at home with things, with fever, with gastroenteritis, who end up having malaria, they're afraid to go to the hospital, so they end up dying at home. So this is such a huge problem, and I think the world is understandably and correctly reacting to it in a massive way.
Dr. Schaffner, we've been talking about how trust is such an important part of this. I noted that yesterday some health workers were attacked while trying to bury Ebola victims. We're starting from ground zero on this. How do we do that to convince people that our people are going to be there to help?
We're going to have to just keep on doing the right things, and we need to communicate more effectively with the public. Without the public's trust and cooperation, the epidemic will continue no matter how much medical care we provide. So we need to communicate clearly and compassionately with folks in ways that they understand.
I noticed,
Bob, I saw a remarkable video that Dan Kelly showed me from Sierra Leone. And in it, there was a woman carrying a baby. And he asked her, do you think, are you afraid that if you go to the hospital, they will inject you with Ebola to give it to you? And she said, well, we hear a lot of things. I don't know what to think. Imagine that she, there actually was a possibility in her mind that doctors were giving the people Ebola. So that's what we're up against.
Dr. Schaffner, any final word?
This is a big start. It's an international effort. It's terribly important. It's impacting the economies of these countries. This is something we need to do, and I think we ought to be proud that we're sending a group of military experts there to help out.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Finally today, if this week showed us anything, it was that when one thing goes wrong, everything seems to go wrong. So to top off a week when things got more tangled up than ever, that guy jumped the White House fence, ran across the lawn, opened the front door, and actually got into the White House. There's a big investigation underway to correct the problem, and I'm always reluctant to offer advice. But at our house, the last thing we do before we turn out the lights is lock the door. Just a tip, but it's worked for us. We'll see you next week on Face the Nation. Today's guests were Congressman Mike Rogers, Senator Dianne Feinstein, U.N. Ambassador Samantha Power, and former Senator Joe Lieber. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. The senior producer is Rob Hinden. This broadcast was directed by Sue Ann Stockey-Wayne. Face the Nation originates from CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com. And you can follow Face the Nation and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Google+, and Facebook.